Conrad Lynn.
Brothers and sisters, I was brought down here today. You don't mind me doing this because I'm beginning to have cataracts in my eyes, and the lights are very hard on my eyes. Peggy Dye, a very good friend of mine, persuaded me to come down today to listen. And your chairman saw me and asked me to come up. It is true that all of the people here, I suppose, are much younger than I am. I celebrate my 82nd birthday this Sunday. I stay up in the woods near Bear Mountain most of the time and very seldom get down to New York City. But when I come down, I see so many people who were active in the struggle, and that always energizes me again. Malcolm was younger than I was, and when he, in 1964, began to be quite independent in his political activity and went overseas, as you remember, and he visited many countries, and he was at Mecca because he had not given up his religion, and he was growing all the time. This was one of the factors that influenced me more about Malcolm than anything else, because as you know, he educated himself very largely in a prison in Michigan. And he developed, he had a remarkable mind, and he never stopped studying. That accounts for the fact that he had a basic humility about him. Now, after he came back, at the end of, I believe it was the beginning of the winter of 65, he proclaimed that the struggle that he adopted was a struggle that all oppressed peoples should be identified with. He cast his program over the oppressed everywhere. Now, it is true that, therefore, the Marxist revolutionaries hailed him in a certain way. But Malcolm was very independent, and he knew that I had been in the Communist Party as far back as 1927, and that I had been expelled from the Communist Party right after Mussolini had used the gasoline that he bought from Russia to slaughter the Ethiopian people. And after the English had trained their warship guns on Trinidad and blew down the oil workers who were striking against Great Britain, and I made a proposal. I was on the city committee of the Communist Party. The wealthiest city committee of the Communist Party in the entire world. And I asked them to finance the struggle of the Trinidadian people against British imperialism. And they said I did not have that on the agenda, and they expelled me. However, I remained a revolutionary And Malcolm knew that I had begun to do work with a little offshoot of the Trotskyist, main Trotskyist party, the SWP. Now, they had a newspaper. The SWP had their regular newspaper. And they were giving very favorable attention to Malcolm in his revolutionary direction and his economic understanding of the roots of imperialism. So they would write articles about him almost every week. And he would meet me because he knew that I knew the people who were writing for the SWP, and also that I had been a student of Marxism for most of my life. And so on Saturday mornings, we would meet and read the articles that would refer to some statement by Malcolm and analyze that, because Malcolm did not want to be the stooge of any particular group. He wanted to be his own man. And that was one of the things that most made me admire Malcolm. At the same time, I knew that that new internationalist attitude and development that Paul was just talking about made him more of an object of hostility by the establishment, because it was his grasp of the global nature of oppression. The fact that modern technological development had made the world so much smaller, and that the instruments of exploitation were more sophisticated. He was far more dangerous to the establishment than any ordinary black nationalist, far more, because he saw the nature of the struggle worldwide. And right now, we are at another crisis. And I'm sure that in the question period, we can develop this later. But at this point, we are on the verge of a major depression, not a recession, no. This goes back to 1929. And that world depression that began then, and you recall, some of you, most of you weren't living then, but Roosevelt, when he came to the office, the first thing he did was close all the banks, because there would be terrible panic, and there would be a terrific crash of capitalism. So he closed all the banks. Now, this was brought to my attention the other day by one of my insurance agent who lives out in Long Island. And he told me, "Mr. Lynn, did you know that the Guardian Bank out here," and I think it was near Westbury somewhere out there, "was being closed, and the people had made a line all around the block getting their money out." Now, I didn't see it on TV. I didn't see a line in the newspaper about it. No commentary, because the United States is in a most delicate position now. It's in a most delicate position. We're in a very critical period. This man, Bush, is trying to do what was done twice before in this century. In the time of a great international economic crisis for capitalism, the Archduke Francis the murder of the Archduke Francis, was made the excuse for the beginning of the First World War. And it was the expenditure of millions of lives and the building of huge armaments and the collaboration of some of the great steel makers in this country with the German steel makers that we had the First World War, and that ended that depression. And then 1929 came, as you know, and again the world was plunged into a new depression. And it was not until the Second World War began that was the means that international capitalism was able to survive on the bones of tens of millions of the dead. And now Bush, who was a CIA chief and who was an intelligent man, he's far more intelligent than Reagan, much more intelligent. And he sees what's coming. It's in the business pages of the New York Times. I read that all the time. He knows that not only is there a slowdown in industry, but that in anticipation now, they're laying off thousands of workers in various places. So Bush seizes on this Middle East crisis. And before there's a war, there's no war yet, he's got hundreds of thousands of American troops over there, large proportion of being black and Hispanic, because they were unemployed. They were the unemployed. So the slaves do the work for the slave master, perpetuate the rule of the slave master. And so he's got hundreds of thousands over in the Persian Gulf in Saudi Arabia. And the word out, and I serve a number of small businessmen, white and black, and they tell me that Bush is trying to hold everything together until the election. And then when the election comes, he will order the assault. Now, we have to understand this is the classic way that world capitalism gets out of a crisis, by another world war. That is not in the interest of humanity, because as it is now with the sophistication of weapons, there's a question of how much would survive in a general war. So we have the opportunity and we have the obligation, as Malcolm would say, of letting our friends, letting our people know that we understand exactly what Paul Butel was telling us, that there must be the activity of the people who are oppressed to form their own political agenda. Don't worry about the fact that in Eastern Europe, all the so-called communist regimes have failed. This only encourages the capitalists over here. They say these people have no other alternative. That's not so. As long as the huge majority of the people of the world are oppressed, we have to find a better way for humanity. Now, the black people are in a very crucial position. The previous speaker mentioned the chief of staff of the United States Army is a black man, Colin Powell, right? When you watch your TV and they show you the troops over there in Arabia, they are very careful to show you pictures of so many black troops. What the message is, it is true that the black and non-white masses of the world have been exploited for 1,000 years by the white rulers. But you see, we have these black people on our side. This is very important for Bush to have this image of Colin Powell there as a chief of staff, and he's a black man. So the message goes out to Africa, to South Africa, where we have a heightening of the oppression of the black people. Only last night I heard a program on South Africa where with de Klerk, who's supposed to have a more liberal policy, the growth of torture in the prison of black activists and their friends, not only black, has grown since de Klerk has come to power. And de Klerk is sending a message to the United States that where you have these exploited masses and they become alert and decide to work for their own freedom, this is the way we keep them under control. So you see, there is a constant interplay. De Klerk visited the president, and he received his blessing, no doubt. So we have to understand that where the enemy is really united in the oppression of the huge majority of non-white peoples of the earth, we have to understand our common bond and make it impossible for them to continue their rule. It is true, as Paul Boutelle pointed out, that we did have a Freedom Now party. I was acting national chairman of that party, and we never did finally solve the problems because some of the people were integrationists and others were not, who felt that the black people would have to go their own way alone. My feeling is that the oppressed people of the world have got to understand their common interests, whatever their cast of color. Only the other night I heard a program for the reactionaries. It was I can't remember the name of this particular broadcast. He's very conservative, but he writes for the for many of the very conservative papers, and he was mentioning the name of an economist who he felt had the right formula for taking care of this depression coming on. And he mentioned the name of Friedrich von Hayek. Now, he knew that nobody there, or most of the people in the TV audience, never heard of Friedrich von Hayek. Friedrich von Hayek was the economic theoretician for Adolf Hitler. This man knew that he could say that. He could mention his name and nobody would recognize. And Friedrich von Hayek had a program. He had a program for capitalism to come out of crises. And this is exactly what Malcolm was studying. He was studying along with me, and in a book by John Strachey. John Strachey was an English writer of the 30s, and he wrote a book, The Nature of Capitalist Crisis. And he discussed Friedrich von Hayek's formula for capitalism to come out of a depression. And the formula was increased oppression, increased exploitation of the masses of people as expendable material. This was the program of Friedrich von Hayek, and this man the other night on the TV, he said, this is the program we should adopt. So I don't think that we can need to remain ignorant of what is happening in the country today, because it's not just New York, but New York, in a sense, has the key. You see that strike out there now about the Daily News. The object is not just to beat down the strikers, but to crush the labor movement. To crush the labor movement. That is the purpose. Just as Reagan, when he the air controllers, when he broke that air controller strike he knew he had given a body blow to the labor movement, white and black. And now this is a new showdown that we are facing in New York. And I think that in the end, we will know how to answer that, because we will formulate our own program.
Thanks a lot, comrades.